Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, good morning. Saturday, 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about your car or symptoms and diagnosis or pricing or when am I due for this. But there's lots of questions that you have that we're going to have some back and forth on. So it's a matter of when you have this vibration, do you feel it in the seat of your pants or in the steering wheel? And when you hear this noise, is it only cold or only hot? So the best way to handle that is if you have a car problem, then give me the make, model, and year and the mileage, and then describe the symptoms to me. That's the most important part of car repair, is this contact between the customer and somebody from the facility, and asking good questions so the technician has a shot. I'll give you a good example of something that happens 3 times a week at my shop, and it's really up to my staff to identify what's going on. My car won't start. Okay, that's a wide open statement. Does that mean that it cranks over, yeah, and it doesn't catch? Or does that mean it doesn't crank over? Or does that mean that it cranks over, starts, and then dies? So my car won't start. That's starter, solenoid, neutral safety switch, ignition switch, electric fuel pump. I mean, there's so many things that can happen. But with a little bit of dialogue, we can figure it out. My car doesn't start. What does it do? It taps. Does it go click, 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 click? Yeah, that's it. Okay, that's a low voltage problem. So those are the kinds of discussions. And just remember that the code that your little three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store gives you, the code is telling you basically that you are, I'm going to fix the feedback because I can hear it myself. The code tells you what state the problem's in. So this last week, I've had lots of conversations with other shop owners for a variety of reasons. And I bring that up to them. I said, you know, what do you think about YouTube? And they all said the same thing. It is a huge problem. Just a huge problem, because people come in and they've gone on YouTube and YouTube's told them how to fix the car. So now they instruct the shop, how to fix their car. There's many shops that are coming up with a form that says, I am directing the repair. I have determined that what I've told the shop is what I want, and I accept full responsibility if my diagnosis is not correct and doesn't repair or correct the problem I'm having. You can understand that bites hard. So if you come in and tell us to balance all 4 tires and check the front axles to make sure they're running true, you could be in for, you know, $75 and that not be it. We had a guy come in the other day that had put 2 racks in his car, 2 rack and pinions assemblies, and put 2 racks in his car, and he just couldn't get it right. And my guy, and it was also a friend of mine, and it was also another shop kind of guy. And so we lifted it up on the rack, and it took us about 5 minutes to determine that the bolts that hold the rack to the frame and to the body were loose. So this click, click on as he turned left and right, was the whole rack was moving. So you take a ratchet and you tighten up 4 bolts, and that's it. Now, when you take the rack off, you have to take these brackets and these 4 bolts off. So I wasn't going to beat him up and say, you know, you touched those bolts twice if you replaced the rack twice. That had nothing to do with it. But these brackets sit in rubber, and it's entirely possible that as he ratcheted down the bolt, that it got to a point where he goes, okay, that's sufficient. Well, you actually have to squeeze the rubber. And so we fixed it, and I don't know, I think I charged him $20 or something like that. But he's a friend of mine, and he's a customer for 150 years, and on and on and on. I don't fix cars for free. Believe me, I don't. And neither does anybody else in town. So if you have a car question, now's the time. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Automatic Transmission Exchange. They've been in Phoenix since 1968. Phil and his staff know how to diagnose transmissions. They know how to repair leaks. They know how to repair transmissions. And he tells me, Phil tells me, that very few times do you actually need a complete overhaul. And typically that's on a car that's well over 150,000 miles and the oil pan's full of metal. And that means something's coming apart inside. But he says, I don't do much of those. But he has the dynamometer where he can put the transmission on this state-of-the-art piece of equipment and make it go through park, reverse, neutral, 3, 2, 1, overdrive, or lockup. He can make it happen. He can also find leaks. So if he's got a problem, he knows about it before he installs it in your car and test drives it. And then he figures out, I got a problem, and he has to take it back out. So there's a customer savings there because he never put it in the first time, and he can fix the problem that somehow he created. So they're on 40th Street in Washington, Automatic Transmission Exchange. It's the only transmission shop in the valley that I recommend. Transmission, Automatic Transmission Exchange. So when it comes to car repair, you ladies, I sympathize with you because oftentimes your husband will tell you what to say. And when you get to the shop, you look like a deer in the headlights and you tell us what he told you to say. And I want to suggest to you that you can say, here's my husband's cell phone, and he will explain to you what it is that's happening, because he tried to explain it to me, and I just don't understand, and I'm afraid I'm going to give you bad information. That is a perfect, we understand code talk. We understand that. My industry understands that kind of code talk. So in the event that you have that situation, I've just given you an easy way out. Gil, who have you got?
We have Lisa.
Lisa, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
I have two questions. So I have a 2015 Dodge Caravan, and it makes this electrical sound, like, after I open the sliding doors on the van.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it'll make that noise when I turn the car on or off. So I had a year-old battery, and it went completely dead. I've taken it to the dealer 3 times, and nobody hears that noise except me. So I kind of feel like a psycho when I'm talking about, a psychedelic person when I'm talking about this draining electrical sound that I hear because nobody heard it. So the battery went dead. I took it to the dealer this morning, and now they did hear it. But with the new battery, that noise only happens when I turn the car on and when I turn the car off. So the guy at the dealer said, well, it's your CD player. I said, no, it's not, but I don't know what it is.
Well,
and the second question,
okay.
Can I wait to hear you answer this?
Yeah, because it would be easier for me.
Okay.
What did the sliding doors have to do with this first problem?
It made that electrical sound after the door opened or closed.
Okay. Isn't that the latch or the lock mechanism? Doesn't that, when you open the door, it unlatches and the door swings open or slides open, and then when you close it, the latch closes and secures the door? Could that noise be that?
No, because that same noise happens now with the new battery. When I turn the motor on, after I turn it on, it makes that noise. And when I turn it off, it's off, and then it makes that noise again. And I haven't touched the sliding door. But
okay.
The sliding door business hasn't happened since I got this brand new battery.
Okay, well, we're not going to deal with that because that's a red herring, okay? We can answer that question after the car's fixed. But to chase it and say, well, she put a new battery in, so should we put an old battery in? Should we try that? Maybe we should take the new battery and drain it down and start the car. You can imagine that that's going to get expensive. So that doesn't make any difference. The question is, where's the noise coming from? Is it coming from the dashboard? Is it coming in from underneath the hood? Is it coming, where's it coming from?
It's coming from the front of the car, that's for sure.
Okay. Does it coincide with you taking the key and trying to start the car?
No.
Okay. So starting the car is not a problem. When you stick the key in the ignition, it goes rrr, 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 and it starts right up, and that's not any part of the problem you're talking about.
Right.
Okay? And when this happens, does it happen any other time except first thing when you get in the car? Or does it happen every single time you're in the car? And does it happen that way?
So when I start the car now, that noise comes on right after I start the car. And when I shut it off, that same noise happens again.
Okay. And you can't duplicate that in front of them?
I did today. I couldn't before.
Okay. Okay. You kind of have to learn how to teach them to make it happen. And the easiest way to do that, you have to understand, the service writer is going to take your information. Then they're going to write it down. They're going to send it to the dispatcher. And this is a dealership arena. The dispatcher is going to get that information, and then he's going to call the technician forward. Well, obviously, if you said the problem's red, it could very well be told to the technician it's green. So you write a note, and you tape it to the rearview mirror, and it says, "Dear technician, here's how you make it happen. Here's my cell phone. Call me if you have a question." That way you're talking to the guy that's working on your car. But I can't diagnose, you know, noises over the radio, and I understand what you're talking about, but you're talking about when you shut the car, and a synopsis is this. When I start the car, after the motor starts, there's a noise, and the noise is a whistle, the noise is a rattle, the noise is a knock, the noise is, and describe the noise. Is it like someone knocking on the door? Is it something that's rattling? Is it kind of a... Those are the kinds of questions that you... And then you say, when I shut it off, then as soon as I turn the key to the off position and the motor quits spinning, then the noise is back again.
Right.
That's what has to happen, where you can write down exactly how to make the noise. Because if they can't get it to happen, then they're not going to be able to fix it. And if they guess, they're going to guess with your money. And, of course, that's a bad idea. How many miles are on your 2015 Caravan?
86,000.
Okay. All right. The only thing I would say is if they say that they've got it fixed, you look them in the eye and you say, "I don't want to pay for guessing. When I get that vehicle back and for the next 3, 4, 5 days, I don't hear that noise. I hope that's what it is, because if it's not, I want to bring it back and I want to start all over again. So I want the old part, put it in the floor of my car. That way, if that doesn't fix it, you can put the old part back on, you can take your new part off, and we can start all over. That's what needs to happen. Now, I know you had a second question, so I'm going to put you on hold, and I'm going to take you right after the break. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Twenty-one minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Satan. We have four open lines available. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And I'll do it right this time, I promise. 602-508-0960. Almost gave you my doggone cell phone number. We're going to go back to Lisa real quick. And Lisa, you had a second question, and I'm all ears.
Hi, thanks again.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to... So this car has 85,000 miles on it, so I was thinking I'd like to get another car just like it with less mileage, and I was looking at rental cars that sell. There's a couple of companies, Enterprise and Hertz, and I was wondering what you thought about that.
I'm kind of wondering why you want another car at 85,000 miles, because in reality that car in human years is like 30 years old. I mean, it's not on its deathbed, and it's not going to fail you anytime soon. And the only time...
It's had three major repairs already.
It's had three major repairs?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And tell me what they were.
Half the valve job needed to be done.
Okay.
And then a few months later, the other half had to be done.
Okay, and that was something...
And I'm sorry.
That's okay. That was something you had to pay for?
No, I have a wrap warranty.
Okay.
And now the air conditioner's out.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I don't know what to tell you. If I were going to buy a used car, my preference is Enterprise. I think their maintenance schedule is better. I think they take their car better care of their cars. I like their people, and I rent Enterprise cars, and I don't find them that they're, you know, filled with cigarette smoke and there's beer cans underneath the seat, that kind of stuff. So if you give me choices, then I vote Enterprise would be the place that you would look for a van.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You bet. And Jerry? Jerry, how are you?
Fine, thank you. I'm so glad to get through.
Okay.
And I love your show. Just love it.
Thank you.
I'm calling because my front bumper is basically falling off. And I need to get a body shop, but I remember listening, I listen to you all the time, but I didn't write down the name of a body shop company that you highly recommended. And I didn't write down the name. I've been trying to figure, I'm 72 years old, so I'm trying to do all this stuff by myself. I've never had to deal with a bumper that's falling off.
Okay. No, that's fine. Let me ask you, is it a big plastic bumper that wraps all the way around the front?
Yes.
Okay.
If I have a Honda Accord 2011.
Okay. All right. I think, do you have a shop that does your oil changes and the rest of your automotive work?
Yes, and I went to them, but they don't do it. They said they wouldn't touch it.
Okay. So it must be damaged then, right?
Yeah. It's basically falling off. And, I guess the clips that are on, that are underneath the hood, the front hood,
uh-huh.
they're on, but they've come loose from the bumper.
Okay. I was going to suggest you go to them because, ask them to look at it and stuff like that. But what part of town do you live in?
I'm in, I'm on Greenway. Greenway and across from the west in 67th
Avenue Street. And Greenway?
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. I would go to Phoenix Body Work. They're up on I-17. They're north of Bell. And
okay.
I would go there, and I would talk to Heather, because
okay.
Heather runs that operation. No matter what
okay.
guy thinks they run that, Heather runs that. And you say to Heather, I'd like you to walk outside and look at my bumper. Now, she may have her shop foreman go out there. The question is this an easy fix? Can we re-secure the bumper without painting it? Because I can live with this scratch or this scratch. Or does the bumper need to be replaced? And if it needs to be replaced, can I have my insurance agent call you? Do you know how it was damaged, by the way?
I think, when these cars, it's a sedan, so it rides kind of low.
Mm-hmm.
And I think either I or, when I had the car parked, when you pull up to like a curb,
mm-hmm.
it might have run over the curb or gone up and brushed it against the molding, the
right.
cement molding. And then when you back up, it probably, maybe it pulled it.
Okay. All right. That happens a lot. You're, when you pull too far forward on a parking block, and then when you back up, the lower portion of the bumper hangs up on the parking block and kind of pulls the bottom of the bumper apart.
Exactly. And I noticed underneath, the filling is underneath, was kind of ripped.
Okay. All right. Well, we need to have somebody look at it, and you need to say to them, what's the minimum I can do? And they may say, I'm going to take a piece of metal, put it on the back of that rip part. I'm going to put a couple of rivets in there. I'm going to bring that back together. It's kind of like stitching up a cut in your arm. And then I'm going to
uh-huh.
remount it. And if you don't care that it's got a couple scratches on it, that's what I'm going to do. Or you can spend lots of money, and I'll take the bumper off. I'll put a new bumper on. Then I'll repaint the bumper. And you can spend a lot of money doing that. So you'll have two choices. Okay?
You know how much a range of what it might cost?
You could spend $1,000 on a new bumper and having it painted to match the car and all the labor and stuff. So I'm guessing. But
yeah.
I say go to talk to Heather and she'll take care of you. Okay?
Okay,
all right.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. And I'm going to get to Jerry in just a sec. Oh, we just talked to Jerry. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Larry Harker's Auto's at 38th Avenue in Indian School, and they've been there since 1967. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto. Ellen's at the front counter. Bob's in the shop. It's a really good shop. They do from oil changes to very detailed, very high-end diagnostic work, and they can do an engine and a transmission replacement. They can do air conditioning. They can do alignments. They can do drive axles. They can do it all. But what you're going to find with Bob and Ellen is really good honesty. They're going to tell you the truth. So no matter if you need electrical work or brake service emissions or vehicle maintenance or why it failed emissions or what it needs to get rid of this vibration, if you live near 38th Avenue and Indian School, may I suggest that you try Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You got a one in, well, you, the first five people are going to get on, but the sixth person is likely to get a busy tone. 602-508-0960. Problems that come and go on a car, the intermittent problems are the most difficult, but the driver is going to save themselves a whole lot of money if they can learn how to make the problem happen. If you can learn how to make it happen. So if I turn the steering wheel all to the right and park, then when I get back in and start it up, then all of a sudden I hear this bang. And then the question is the steering wheel all the way to the right? No, it isn't. Oh, okay. Then I want you to start putting it straight ahead and see if the problem comes back.
1 minute.
No, it doesn't. Okay. Well, the power steering is yanking the tire back to straight. So it's recentering the tire, or the tire's too far to the right or too far to the left. So there's all of this that goes on, but an intermittent is tough. When we come back, we're going to talk about, there was this customer who diagnosed their own car, and then they went out and bought some used parts from a wrecking yard, and then they were searching for someone to install the used parts. Now, this is an expensive repair. New parts are expensive. And so, what kind of response do you think he got from repair shops under the conditions of, I've diagnosed it myself and I'm bringing my own parts? There's a real pitfall there, and it affects both the shop and the customer, and really and truly we'll discuss that when we come back. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We got five lines. Thirty-four minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. And I talked at the very beginning of the last segment, at the end of, that the customer comes to you and has an alternator in their hands, and they say, I've already diagnosed it, the alternator's bad, would you put it on? I don't know of a single shop that would do that, and here's why. It's really simple. You put the alternator on, and his problem isn't solved. So the shop has to retest the car to find out what's going on. So they can't just say, you know, you still have the dash light on and I put the alternator on. Well, then he says, well, then you did something wrong because this alternator's good. So then you got to take the number two alternator off and put the number one alternator on, and you go, well, wait a minute, both alternators are working. You still got the dash light. And he goes, no, you're wrong. So the shop goes, well, I'm not wrong. Both alternators are working. So you diagnosed it as a bad alternator. You hired us to put on an alternator. We did. Not only did we do it one time, we took the new one off, the one you had, and put number two on. And then we put number one back on, and both of them work. So the customer goes, well, I didn't accomplish anything, and they leave without paying. So the shop had to not only do all that work for free, but they had to prove to the customer that they didn't make a mistake. And so the customer leaves with a free diagnosis. He just knows that both alternators are good, so he's going to take it back and get another part from the wrecking yard, go talk to the three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store, ask him for another good guess. I'm telling you unequivocally, I will never get involved in those kinds of situations, because I've been in this business for 39 years, and you only have to, when you're up to bat, and if you close your eyes when the ball's thrown at you, there's a good chance every once in a while you're going to get hit. I've been hit too many times. I learn a lesson long before it's 10 times where I get hit. So we don't do that because it's just an effort in futility. Strictly Diesel and Service and Repair is a good diesel repair service. Foreign and domestic light trucks, I-17 at Pinnacle Peak Road, they know diesels like hardly anybody else I know. They have really great techs. Nate runs the operation. He's a great tech himself. And they're on, like I said, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. And you can go to their website, and 24 hours a day they have parts that if you want to step up the air filter, or if you want to step up this or have it a little bit more power there, They've got some stuff on their website that will help you make that decision. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Charlie, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, sir. It isn't a problem, I don't think, but I got a 95 F-250 with a 7.3 turbo. Just a week or so ago, it was getting ready to turn 400,000, had three in all the nines, and I pulled off the road and pulled out my camera, took a picture of the three and a bunch of nines, and then I drove it just a little further, and it clicked over, and it clicked over to 300,000 miles. It didn't go to 400,000. You ever run across that?
Yeah. No, I've never run across that, but that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean that I'm right and you're wrong. So, how many miles have you got on it now? Is it 300,000?
I've probably put another 500 or 600 since then.
Okay, so it hasn't rolled past three. It's still at three.
Well, 300,000 plus another 500,000, or 300,500 or something like that.
Okay, so let me get this straight. You're driving down the road and you recognize that you're a half a mile away from 400,000, so you took a picture or whatever.
2 minutes.
And then you went to 400,000. And actually, you thought it would roll from 300,000 to 400,000, and it didn't roll, and so now it's still at 300,000.
That's correct.
Okay. I don't know what to tell you about that. There's a place called Dick Speedo and Tack over in Tempe, and they could probably answer your question. They could probably fix it and then put it at 400,000 plus 50 miles, and then you would feel safe in knowing that you could write down that this has actual mileage plus or minus a mile. Plus you have a receipt that says this is what happened and this is fixed. So he took it from 300,000 and 50 miles to 400,000 and 50 miles, and he fixed the problem why it didn't roll the first time. So that's how I would handle it. But no, I've never seen that happen before. But don't be mad at Ford, and I'll tell you why. At 400,000 miles... you've gone around the world 16 times, so that's a lot of miles, and that 7.3 will do it every day of the week, but it's just the luck of the draw. You probably were mad at your wife, or you probably didn't come home as early as you said you would, and that's the karma that you got.
Okay, can I have one more question?
Okay, go ahead.
I think it runs kind of rough. Starting it up in the morning. Can you guys, do you have a plug, just a device where I bring it in, you plug it in, say, yeah, the injector, blah, 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 needs to be replaced, or do you have to get down inside the cover there and short them out and all that stuff?
Well, it's a little bit of both, but no, we're not going to start shorting out injectors because they're pressure fed. So there's not really any electrical stuff to that other than on the front side, but we're not going to do that. What we're going to do is talk to you about it and say, is it blue smoke? Is it black smoke? How long does it take to clear up? Can you leave it overnight and let us drive it? We'd like to know if it has a misfire. Do you feel a misfire? Do you feel when the misfire clears up? So, and then if it clears up, does the black smoke go away? So you say, it's got black smoke first thing in the morning, and it goes, instead of going, it goes, da-da, ba-ba, da-da-da-da-da. So it's got a miss. And so by the time I drive two blocks, then the miss is gone, there's no more black smoke, and everything's fine until the next morning, and it does it again. If you give them symptoms like that, we're all going to think that you got an injector that's leaking. So at nighttime, it's leaking raw fuel into that cylinder, and when you start it up, it's got to get that diesel fuel ignited and send it out the tailpipe, and it's going to be black. What we also want to see is that it doesn't happen during the day, and it only happens after you park it at night. Because if you go into Fry's and you're there for 30 minutes and you come back out and you start it up and it's not missing and there is no black smoke, then that doesn't mean it's not an injector. We need the injector to sit by itself for 8 to 10 hours overnight. So in order to duplicate it, we need to do exactly what you did. But, yes, we have scanners where we can go in and look at the cylinder contribution. So, hey, let me look at this and see, oh, cylinder one is, 60%. Da, 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 da. Oh, here's one at 12%. Oh, okay, that's the one I need to focus on. Now, we move that injector to the next one, and we put that injector back, and then all of a sudden the problem moves. Bingo, we got an injector problem. So it's not going to be cheap, but we're capable of doing that no matter where you go. What part of town are you in?
East Mesa.
Okay. I would call Thompson's in Mesa on Main Street and Stapley and ask them if they want to do that. If not, you're going to probably have to go, let me see here, you can go up to Strictly Diesel Strictly Diesel is up on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. There's also Diesel Doctor in North Scottsdale. And then if you can make it happen and it's on a regular basis, there's a guy in Tempe, which is me, that would look at your diesel. So you got a couple of different options. All righty.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Sir, thank you.
You betcha. And that was, we still have Jerry on the line. Is that right, Gil?
Yes, that's right, but we have to take a break.
I understand. So, Jerry, it's my fault that I have to take a break, but you'll be first, I promise. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 46 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and I'm going to talk with Jerry just like I promised. Jerry, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Mark, hey, I've got a question on a 1979 Trans Am, and okay. I'm a longtime listener of your show. The symptoms with this car is that it starts up okay when it's cold, runs good, but after I run the car for about 15 minutes and shut it down and try to restart it, it's a slow crank, and then you can hear the starter disengage. And I was wondering what would I be looking for?
Ooh, but you've given me really good symptoms. I like that. I like mm-hmm. that a lot. Here, let me think out loud. So in the morning, he starts it up and there's no problem. Does it fast idle in the morning?
It does fast idle.
Okay, so when you get in, you turn the key on, you pump it once or twice, you let go of the throttle, it starts up, it coughs a little bit, and then it goes, and smooths out, right?
That's it.
Okay, I know them cars really well. I worked on those cars. All right, so you kick the choke off, you know, a mile from home, everything is fine, right? And you pull into the bar, and then when you come back out, you start it up, right? And does it start or does it just crank?
Well, when I try to start it up after about 15 minutes of running, it's a slow crank, and then I can hear the starter disengage, and then I let it sit for about 10 or 15 minutes, and it starts up just fine.
Okay. So when you say slow crank, it goes rrr, rrr, rrr.
That is correct.
Okay. All right. So we either have a starter that's getting hot, and maybe we're drawing too much amps for the electrical system, or the timing's too far advanced, and we'll drag the starter after it gets warm, or the battery's intermittently bad and not providing the necessary electricity.
Okay.
The test on that's going to be $45, $55. That's
okay,
what
now,
most of us are going to check. It's an electrical systems check first.
What would I do if it was a heat soak problem on the starter? Just replace the negative cable?
No.
Or would
no.
I just put a heat shield on it?
Well, the first thing we'd have to do is we have to check to make sure. Here's the deal. I want to start with 13 volts, okay? I want to start with 13 volts. That's normal. A fully charged battery can be north of 13, but I want 13. I don't want the voltage to drop below 12.6 or maybe 11.6. I don't want it to drop below when I hit the key. So when I hit the key, the starter's going to ask for lots of amps. Give me 250 amps. And that's going to drop the voltage in the battery. I don't want to see it drop below 10. I don't want to see it drop below 10 for sure, but I want to see it between 11 and 12.
So if you had a person inside the car and you were to start it, and then the other person puts a multimeter on the battery on the positive and negative cable post,
mm-hmm.
And then checks it that way? Is that the way I would check the voltage?
Yeah, you get out of the car and you tell the person who's in the driver's seat, I'll tell you when to crank it. You stick your voltmeter on there, you see what you started with, okay? Then you say, hit it. And if they hit it and the voltmeter goes down to 8 volts and it goes, rrr, 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 you say, okay, stop. You let it cool off, 10, 15 minutes like you said. You do the same test over again. And then all of a sudden, you go, rrr, 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 and you go, okay. Now I know that something is dropping the battery below its normal voltage. And now, here's something else you can do. You can take a bucket of water, and if you get the dragging starter syndrome, you just dump the 5-gallon bucket of water on the starter. And then if it starts up, then the starter's getting hot, and the starter's probably overamping the battery. And as long as there's no other symptoms other than this one, and the lights aren't changing intensity from real bright to yellow and dim and all that other happy stuff, then more than likely you have a starter. Now, here's what I would do. I'd hook up a piece of equipment to your car, and I would start it up and get all my readings cold. And then I would go drive it. I'd probably race it a little bit. I'd probably race some of those Volkswagens to show them what an old V8 from GM really can do. I'm kidding you, of course. And then I'd drive it, and I'd get it really warm. I might even let it sit in the bay and hot soak for 15 or 20 minutes. And then I'd shut it off. I'd put my equipment back on, and voila, I see the starter amperage draw double. So then I'm going to test the battery to make sure that I can apply 200 amps to the battery. That's normal. And the battery can hold up above 10. So I go, okay, the battery's fine, but the starter is drawing way too much power. And so I'm going to call you and say, put a starter and a solenoid in it. You'll be fine.
Okay. Now, I've got one more question for you. Now, with these older cars, sometimes they have a problem with fuel delivery.
Okay.
You know, after, what was that called, the vaporization of the fuel? Now, could you explain the symptoms that that might have?
Okay, well, that has nothing to do with this, okay?
Okay,
it has not, but that's all vapor lock.
No, vapor lock, that's what I want.
Fuel that's not pushed from behind it. Otherwise, fuel that's pressurized. The newer model cars, there's no such thing as vapor lock anymore because we're using a high-pressure fuel pump inside the gas tank to shove that gasoline forward.
Yes,
so the gas can't turn to a vapor. But when you're sucking on fuel, like your car is, because it has a fuel pump on the motor and it's sucking out of the tank and pushing into the carburetor, then it can vapor lock. And more than likely, you're going to have just an extended cranking. So and every other time, it goes, and this time it's going to go, and then if you let it cool off, everything's fine. But that's not what you said the first time.
Okay, yeah. I was just kind of
two separate sippings.
How to differentiate between the two, you know? So it's a vapor lock would be a fast start, and then the...
the other way around. The vapor lock's going to be... It ain't going to start. You got air bubble in the system. And so once the gas turns from a liquid to a vapor, it expands, and so it acts like a... it acts like, you know that stent that they put in your veins to blow up? They put the little air to it and it blocks the veins? Well, that's the same thing what it looks like when you have an air bubble in the fuel system. That's almost always related to heat. So in summer, you got your wife in the car, you're going to go down to the A&W and have root beer, and then you're going to hop on the freeway and, you know, drive up and down the freeway, and you get home, and then you decide you're going to go to the neighbor's house, and it's two blocks away, and you hit the key, and it's going to go, and it's not going to catch. It's not going to catch. So you let it cool off. You walk down to the neighbors. You come back. You hit it. Boom, it starts right up.
Now,
that's vapor lock.
Okay, so how would I know if I need a stronger battery in the car? Because I'm not too sure that the battery was selected correctly for this car.
Okay. Well, it's going to be a CCA number, and the CCA number 500, 600, 700, cold cranking amps. CCA stands for cold cranking amps. So in your case, you're probably going to have at least a 400 CCA battery, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then a simple battery test is we'll take off we'll unplug the coil power. And so we're just going to crank the motor over. So we're going to take a special piece of equipment. We're going to hook up to the battery. We're going to use this inductive amp probe and go around the negative cable or the positive. It doesn't make any difference. And we're going to crank the motor over. Well, we're going to disable the ignition system so it doesn't start. But we want to crank it over for 15 seconds. Now we're checking the amp draw. We're checking the voltage on the battery. If it fails either one of those, you need a new battery. That test is $25, $35. So,
all right.
But it's not going to be the situation you're talking about where it cranks normally, but when it's hot, it goes rah, rah, rah. That's not a vapor lock. That's not, I promise you.
Okay. Okay? Great. That answers my question today, and I really appreciate it. And I've been listening to your show for, I don't even know, I've lost count on how many years. So,
that's okay.
I enjoy listening to you.
Who does your repairs? Where do you live?
Well, I live here in Glendale, and the zip code's 85308.
Okay. Kurtz is on Bell and I-17, and Action Auto's on Deer Valley and I-17. Both of those guys have gray hair. Both of us have hair in all of us have hair in our ears and in our nose, and that car we know like the back of our hand.
Okay.
So those would be guys that you could do that.
I'll check with Kurt or Action Auto.
And then what you say is, you say, this old Trans Am, the 79 Trans Am, there are times it cranks over just fine. The motor just... But when it's warm, it's... That's it. All you have to do. And you say, is there an electrical test you run? And he goes, oh, yeah, I'll check your battery, your alternator. I'll check for shorts. I'll check for draws. And that's $35. And you say, tell me what time you want me to come down.
Sounds pretty good.
Okay.
All right. Well, hey, thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. There's a difference between us gray-haireds and the young bucks. The young bucks are raised on Apple telephones and computers. But when it gets to the older cars that have points and condenser, electronic ignition, you got a Ford with an ignition box, GM with an ignition box, we know those cars. We don't need no fancy equipment to find out that the pickup assembly on your GM distributor, HEI distributor's got a broken wire. We got that. We know when the center of the distributor cap on a GM, when they tightened up the bolts too tight to hold the coil in the distributor. We also know, like I just talked to Jerry, if we have a problem with the distributor and it advances the timing, then it's going to drag the starter. That's easy for us to do. We just simply disable the ignition system and it cranks over normally. So there's all these tricks. So if you have an older car, maybe from like 2007 and older, you probably need one of us gray-haired guys to effectively and efficiently fix your car. How else do I put it? 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960.
2 minutes.
Kurt's is a good place. He's on I-17 in Bell in the northeast corner. You got Kurt, Jeff, and Eric. Now, Jeff and Eric are the two young bucks, but they're really smart. Kurt's the old guy. So they got everything covered from the 2018-19s all the way back to the 50s. But if you have a fundamental knowledge, you can apply that virtually in any circumstance. But what they've got is they got 3 ASE Master Certified Technicians, which means they're masters, they're qualified in every aspect of car repair. And you got the old guy and 2 young guys. The old guy's going to help the 2 young guys on this Trans Am, but in reality, they'll probably muster through it okay. And they'll probably do some testing that we use on the newer model cars as well. So it's kind of important, and especially if you have a problem that when you ask the service writer at the shop and he looks at you with a blank, he or she looks at you with a blank stare, and then you say, have you ever heard of that before? And they go, nope, nobody's ever said that before. It's probably time to find somebody who's been around when that car was born. It's also important when you're talking to the service writer to ask them what the analysis is going to cost. What's the diagnosis going to cost? What are you going to do? And what do you think it is? Because when the car doesn't start, the question has to be, does it crank or does it crank over and not catch? And if that question is not answered, then we don't know if it's spark or fuel. So we're going to have to test both systems and you're going to pay a bigger diagnostic bill. So if you just be specific, it cranks over, it goes, but it doesn't catch and it only does it hot. Or vice versa. When I hit the key, it just goes, and that doesn't do any more. That's an electrical problem, battery starter. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. Four minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, this is called the top of the hour. So we've got another hour's worth of car talk and your car questions and car problems, all you have to do is call 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil will answer the phone. He's the engineer. He's the one that's supposed to keep me in line, keep me out of trouble. He's not doing a very good job, and he doesn't always do a very good job, but that's okay. He's just the one that gives me the bad news. Somebody called. And I said, oh, who called? And he goes, someone from the station, and they didn't like what you said. And I said, tell them I'm sorry. And then Gil has to tell them I'm sorry. And he does a pretty good job at that because I don't get in a whole lot of trouble. But nevertheless, 602-508-0960, Action Auto Repair is located at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom is a full-service, family-owned, operated shop that served Deer Valley in the North Phoenix area since 1983. I've known Tom since the early 80s. So whatever kind of car you drive, They're really well known for quality workmanship, excellent customer service, fast turnaround time, and they know how to make it happen. Talk to the customer. Find out what the symptoms are. Then do some testing and quote them the diagnostic and testing time. Then call them and tell them what's the matter with the car and here's the repair. So we have three portions of money. The diagnostic money, then the part, and then the labor. That's how it works. And Action Auto knows exactly how to do that. So if you're up near I-17 in Deer Valley, Action Auto Repair, northwest corner. And I'm ready. Gil, who have we got?
We have Ed.
Ed, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Well, I have an electrical issue with a 2004 Chevrolet cabin chassis. It's the 84-inch cab to axle truck, one ton. And the problem I'm having is I bought this truck as a cabin chassis, and then I put a flatbed on it, and I hooked up my wiring. And I've got all my lights except for brake lights. And it got me puzzled here. So
okay.
Maybe you could shine some light on that for me.
Well, I can. Do the turn signals work left and right?
Yes, they do.
Okay. Well, here's how it works. Your turn signal switch, you start it up and the key's on and the motor's running, or even if the key's on and the motor's not running, so you turn right turn signal on and you get out and you look at the right front and the right rear and they're both flashing. Turn on the left, right, and left front and left rear are both flashing. The brake light switch, when you apply the brake light switch sends a signal up to the turn signal switch. Then the turn signal switch uses the same wire that the flashers are on, but its height lights up both of those wires. So we're using the turn signal switch as kind of a junction. The first question you got to do is crawl underneath there and see if the brake light switch has power to one side and it's dead on the other. And then when you apply the brake pedal, it should have power on both sides because it's passing electricity through the switch. From there, it goes up. Now, because the turn signals are working, and I specifically ask you if the back ones were flashing, and you said yes, then I doubt that the turn signal switch is the problem. Another thing you should do is put the hazards on and make sure all four lights are flashing in synchronization. One of the other things you can do is turn the key on and just hammer that stupid brake pedal hard. You're not going to hurt anything, but just push it down really hard. Have your wife or a neighborhood kid behind and just look for that kind of flash. All we want to know is how come we don't have power back there? But I know we have power in the ground because you got turn signals working. So this really isn't that big of a deal, but I would start at the brake light switch. And you may have power in, but no power out. If that's the case, then take the brake light switch out and jump the terminals.
Okay, so what I did do was I went to the fuse panel, and when I apply the brake pedal, I do have power going through both the brake fuse and the high mount brake light on the back of the cab.
No, you don't. All you know is that you got power passing through the fuse. That's all you
got. Well, that is correct.
Okay, I talked to you about power coming out of the brake light switch.
Right.
Okay. That's a whole big different story. I don't even suspect that you have a power problem, except maybe the brake switch isn't passing it on because you already said you had you had turn signals on the back.
Correct.
Okay. So either we do it my way or you can continue to flounder, but I said start at the brake light switch and get down underneath it. Okay, go ahead.
Actually, what I was hoping for is that you could refer me to an electrical shop that knows this truck well enough where they could go right to the problem and get it fixed.
No,
my head.
No, you should have said that at the beginning. But here's the deal. You're asking me to send you to somebody to save you some money, and there's a specific amount of diagnostic time that's going to have to happen here. So I can send you to a lot of shops that can fix this problem. But your caveat was, I want somebody that knows the system real well and I'm going to benefit from their experience. Well, it doesn't work that way. If I go out there and diagnose a car in 45 minutes, I'm charging you 45 minutes. I'm not. But if I diagnose a car in 10 minutes, I'm probably going to charge you 15 or 20 minutes because I'm going to have to write the paperwork up. But people don't take advantage of our expertise. You don't get a better price if you get a more senior guy there. It may not take him as long, but you have to pay for his experience. No different than a brain doctor and a fancy doctor that is better than all the rest that take your pulse and your temperature. So I think on a 1 to 10 scale, you need a shop that's capable of a 3. This is not a 5, and this ain't a 10. This is pretty simple. So look at MarkSalem.com. Find a repair shop close to you. Don't tell them what you've done. Don't tell them what to fix. Don't tell them what the guy on the radio said. You just say, I've got turn signals on the back end, but I don't have any brake lights. That's all they need to know. That's all we need to know. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. It's important when you deal with your shop. I open the show with this comment. Ladies, I feel sorry for you. Because inevitably, a lady will come in, and we know she's regurgitating what her husband told her. She's using words that she wouldn't otherwise know, like cooking words that I wouldn't otherwise know. But they're trying to tell us something that their husband said, and it has nothing to do with symptoms. It has to do with what he thinks is wrong with the car. So I feel sorry for the ladies that have to do that, and oftentimes a shop will simply say, well, whose car is this? Well, it's mine. Okay. Who talked to you about the diagnosis or what they think is wrong with it? Well, that was my husband. Can I just call him? Can I talk to him? Not to slight you, ma'am, but can I have a discussion with him? Because I'm going to ask you questions that you can't answer. So perhaps I should go to the horse's mouth. See how fine I walked that line? Even Gil is shuddering right now. Nevertheless, that's what really needs to happen. Again, you're better served by just getting to the point. I have turn signals on both sides. I have flashers all the way around. I walk all the way around the car, and they're all flashing. What I don't have is when I hit the brake, I don't have brake lights. We're done. We know the ground is intact because the flashers use the same infrastructure as the brake lights. So, I mean, they may check the grounds on those taillight sockets, but I can tell you because the flashers are working, then it's not going to be a socket. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Auto Dynamics is Sun City's oldest and largest complete automotive service facility. They opened up in 1982, and they're still there. This is a family that's still there. Now, there's lots of shops that may have been there 3 or 4 years longer, but they've been through 3 or 4 owners. So Auto Dynamics is different. The Nyday family still runs Auto Dynamics, and actually Derek the son runs this. So if you're looking for a great shop in Sun City, you're looking for somebody that's going to treat you fairly, somebody who knows how to work on cars and diagnose them and how to bid them, then may I suggest Auto Dynamics, Automotive Dynamics. It's north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. North side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. If you send an email to mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com, if you'll give me your phone number, I'd appreciate it. I'm going to call you from a blocked line. But I had a gentleman who took his car in. He had one strut leaking on the front. It was a 40,000-mile car. He was past basic warranty, but he had an aftermarket warranty. His first question happened to be, is a McPherson strut, which is a strut on the front of most front-wheel drive cars, and a Bilstein strut the same? And my answer is yes. It's just like a quart of oil with Valvoline and Chevron is basically motor oil. It just has a different name. They wanted to stick a cartridge to replace the strut, and that's an acceptable repair. Otherwise, we take the inner guts out of this strut, which is just a big shock absorber. We take the guts out and we replace the guts with a new cartridge. It's kind of like putting a new cartridge in your ink pen. That's what it's like. Unless the spring that's involved in this thing is collapsed, then we want to put the whole assembly in. We want the spring and the strut, which is nothing more than, like I said, a shock absorber. So that's kind of how it works with respect to repairs. But in this case, he was concerned about a name difference. And then they also told him that his lower control arm bushings were bad. And I asked him, does it clunk when you take off kind of hard, the front end clunk? And if you brake abruptly as you're coming up to a traffic light, is there a clunk there? And they said no. And then I said, well, what's the matter with the lower control arm bushings? Well, they're cracked. I want to tell you folks, nothing drives me crazier than to have a technician say that the belt is cracked or the tires are cracked or the lower control arm bushings are cracked. I don't care about that. Cracked is a word that's, you say to your wife, I love you, kinda. That's what it's like. Cracked is a word that doesn't mean anything. Cracked is a word where somebody wants to walk down the center lane on the striped line. He doesn't want to sit down hard and say, you need lower control arm bushings. They're coming apart in pieces. Don't you have a clunk on acceleration or stopping? Oh, you do? I can fix that by putting lower control arm bushings in it. But when you use, the lower control arm bushings or upper control arm bushings or your tie rod, they're cracked. That's just a way to sell you something and not be afraid of the attorney general for citing you for fraud. And that brings up another really quick point, is the attorney general announced not too long ago that they're going to go after bad shops. I'll tell them, like I'll tell you, come on down, bring your undercover cars, do whatever you want to do. But there's a whole lot of shops in this valley that are going to play the game. They're going to do what they're supposed to do. They're going to do what's right. The ones that typically have the problems is the older shops that are run by newer people, and perhaps the newer people came from an environment the car repair doesn't play a part. So maybe he's a retired Motorola engineer, or maybe she is a retired nurse, and the two of them are working an auto repair shop, and they got a bunch of grizzled guys in there that know that they can talk fast and get mom and pop to sell stuff that really doesn't need to be done. That's just one of the many examples. 602-508-0960. That's the phone number. We have five lines. You can call us. 602-508-0960. 21 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here talking about car repair and stuff like that. We're on iHeartRadio and a variety of other venues, but if you're in the Phoenix metropolitan area, it's 960 AM, The Patriot, and it's owned by Salem Communications. So if you have a complaint about Mark Salem, then you should give the complaint to Salem Communications. It's just a funny thing to say. It just happens to be that's the way it was. All my life, when I was a kid, they called me Salem Cigarettes, and now I say Salem spelled like the cigarette. And the youngster, the young lady, the young man in front of me just rolls their eyes. They don't have a clue what I'm saying because, obviously, Salem Cigarettes were a long time ago. So, nevertheless, Mark Salem, and my email address is mark, with a K, at marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. If you have a question, I usually like to call you back, and here's why. I usually have a series of questions to ask you. And it's so hard for me to constantly communicate over email. You have to understand I could get 100 emails a day. I do my best to answer every one of them. I know the difference between somebody's asking for car advice and somebody wanting to sell me something or telling me my Social Security account has been canceled or any of that kind of stuff. So, and because we don't have any callers, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, I'm kind of ornery, so if you're upset about this, then I'm sorry. But, you know, there's times on your phone now that if somebody calls in or sends you a message, you can push a button and send them a message. And usually it's, I can't talk right now, or something like that, okay? So my friends, all my buddies, are really kind of sick guys. They're just kind of sick guys. So I have gathered these from all my friends. And so I'm gonna read it to you if I can get it to show here. Oh gosh darn it! My wife showed me how to do this, but I'm not gonna be able to pull this off. Here it is. Nope, that doesn't work either. I will call you back. Oh, anyway, I'll get it straightened and then I'll let you know on the next break. But one of them it says is, I'm presently talking to a cop who thinks I'm drunk. Can I call you back in 24 hours? And that's from a retired policeman. Of course, everybody knows it isn't the truth, but it does make you laugh. And so those are the kind of things that us sick guys normally gravitate to. and I just wish I could tell you. The first one is just awesome because it's from an attorney, and the response is just so perfect for an attorney to write you back, but it's just not going to work today, and I'm sorry that I messed this all up, but I can tell you I am going to try. I'm going to go in here to my phone, and you'll just have to put up with me for a few minutes. But give me just a second. I know that there's somebody on the line. So what I'm looking for is this cop that called me. And, here it is. Okay. And again, it says, I'm presently talking to a cop who thinks I'm drunk. Can you call me in 24 hours when I'm released? That's number one. When you reply that way because you're on the phone or you're busy, it's funny, okay? This is where I'm picking it up from everybody else. There's one. Although my mission in life is to serve you, I am currently unable to provide the premium level of service you deserve. Therefore, I beg your forgiveness and give you my solemn promise that I will call you back at my first and earliest ability. Now, that's on a lawyer's, you know, phone. And then I have another friend, I'm not going to give you his name, he says, you call him, and this is the response you get if you email him, or if you call him, or if you text him. It says, screw you, I hate you, don't ever call me again. A lot of people don't know how to take that, but you just do it amongst your friends. But those are the three best messages I've ever seen, and I have them on my phone now just because it's funny. And you're not going to use them on your doctor who's calling you to verify an appointment. You're going to use them on your buddies and your friends and stuff like that. Okay, I'm ready. Who's next?
That would be Charles.
Charles, good morning to you. How can I help you today?
Hey, good morning, Mike. Mark, Sam, George. Hey, where's Renee when you need her?
You know, I can tell you that. Renee, we're up north, and Renee said, she gets me up early in the morning. She goes, come on. I says, why? And is the courses loose or whatever? She goes, we're going garage sailing. I said, what do you need me for? She says, we're going to take your truck. I said, why are we going to take my truck? And she says, because I might buy some furniture. So she dragged me out of bed. I got coffee. I'm driving around to junk sales. So then we get back, and I say, you going to do radio with me today? And she goes, no. I said, why not? She goes, I'm going to Pine to look at the junk stores. So she's at the junk stores. I'm making money. She's spending money. That's the answer to your question.
Okay. That wasn't my question, but
okay.
This Vietnam veteran buddy called me the other day, and he was on his way to I-17 up north to Flag, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he sees this vehicle in a rearview mirror approaching them rather quickly. Then within seconds, this truck passes them like he was sitting still. He said the truck must have been new 90 or 100. He doesn't remember. But it was a majestic-looking truck. Painted on the side was the American flag, bald eagle, etc. I said, I bet that was Mark Salem, $100. Mark, was that you?
You know, I must tell you that does sound like my truck, but it's important for you to know that there's so many people that drive my truck. My cowboys drive my truck. My wife drives my truck. My son, my one daughter drives my truck. There's a couple of retired policemen up here in Payson that have taken my truck to go do things. So I can assure you, Charles, that I will do my very best to talk to the people. Can you tell me, was this a week ago, in the last week, in the last month? Because I'll figure out who it is.
Yeah, it was just the last week or so.
Okay, all right. So I will look and see who's been driving my truck, and I will counsel them about driving my truck in a reckless manner when it has stuff about Vietnam veterans all over it, and it has a flag. It's dressed in a flag. So I will handle that, and thank you for bringing this to my attention in such a public format. Thank you. And goodbye, Gil. It's dump time. It's goodbye.
He's gone.
Oh, gosh.
2 minutes.
I'm going to tell you the truth. Here's the deal. Nixon called the draft 2 weeks before I was to go to the Vietnam War. I have always had a very soft spot in my heart and in my head for Vietnam veterans because they didn't come back to the welcome that many of the rest of you did. And it's my heir and my brothers and the guys that were older than me all went to Vietnam. So I have this truck, and it says, God bless Vietnam veterans, in the back window. And the other day I was over at Walmart, and this guy walks up, and he goes, I really like your truck. And it's dressed in a flag and has eagles on it and stuff. And I said, thank you. Thank you very much. And he goes, but I don't think you should just say Vietnam. And I said, oh, why? And he goes, well, I think you should just say God bless all veterans. And I said, well, let me explain. It's Vietnam, and they were my heir, and those are my friends, and they didn't come home to the welcoming committee that the rest of you did. And he goes, well, I don't care. He says, I think that you should remove the word Vietnam and just say God bless all veterans. And I said, well, there is one other reason why I'm going to politely decline. And he said, oh, what's that? And I said, well, it's my truck. I thought my wife was going to wet her pants. She was really mad for me. She thought I was rude. I've never had anybody do that. This truck's been on the road for 5 years. So most everybody else takes a picture, sticks their thumbs up. So it's just one of those things. But nevertheless, I am very patriotic. But my patriotism is especially focused on the Vietnam veterans who came back again to quite a different embrace from the public than the guys in the last 20 years have gone. And I wasn't a Vietnam veteran because, like I said, Nixon called the draft 2 weeks before I was to be drafted, and the Hanoi evacuation occurred within a month after that, so the war was over at that particular time. We'll be back in just a minute. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, Mark Salem at your service, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been in Mesa since 1970. Both Brian and his wife Thelma have family that dates back to the 60s with gas stations and garages. Both of those young people, a married couple, have been around a very long time. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. They know what it's all about to work on cars, fix them correctly, work on the symptoms, make sure you come in under your estimate. They know all that. I'm proud to tell you that I don't think I've ever had a complaint about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. It's the only shop in Mesa that I can recommend to you. I'm not saying it's the best shop in, or it's the only shop in Mesa, but I am telling you it's the best that I know of in Mesa, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Jaime, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2002 Dodge Ram 2500. It is four-wheel drive.
Okay.
And the steering is, I mean, very, very sloppy. And I've replaced some components, and it helps a little bit, but it gets right back to just it's sloppy all over the place.
Okay. This is an easy one. I want you to crawl underneath the front of the truck, and I want you to set the parking brake, and I want you to get your wife underneath or get her in the driver's compartment. And you're going to have the hood open, and you're going to put her hand at 12 o'clock. The car's going to be running, and you're going to have her move the hand to the right about 3 inches and then center and then to the left about 3 inches. Does that make sense to you? She's just going to rock the steering back a little bit. You're going to look underneath the hood, and you're going to see the steering shaft come into the steering box. Then at the bottom of the steering box, there's a pitman arm. I need the steering shaft and the pitman arm to be completely synchronized, okay? When one moves, the other moves instantaneously. Now, you're going to crawl underneath the front of the truck. The parking brake is on, and she still loves you, and she's not mad at you, so she doesn't run over you. You're going to lay down in the front, and you're going to follow the pitman arm to the tie rod end, then the tie rod end, the other end of the bar, to the wheel at the tie rod end, then the center link that goes all the way across the front. You're going to look at every single one of those joints, and you better see the top and the bottom of the tie rod end move in complete synchronization. I don't want the top to move a quarter inch and then the bottom move. That's how we do it. It won't take you a minute. It'll take you five, but you're looking for the play, and you're starting at the steering wheel, and you're going all the way to the two front tires. I promise you, somewhere along the line, you'll see the play you're going to have to fix.
Okay. And all of the parts, I mean, would be whatever I can get at the auto parts store will be adequate? Or is there like a better heavy duty that I can get?
No. I think price is going to play a part in it. So one of them could be $29 and the other is going to be $41. Borg Warner, there's some there. But to answer your question, there are some cheap parts out there, but they're typically going to be priced inexpensively. I'd look for a front end parts that have a name that you've heard before. So that's, you know, all I can think of right now is Borg Warner, but I know Jeff, my parts manager, could rattle off three or four parts brands that we use. And you can just call a couple places and ask them. If you need a tie rod on the passenger side, you just call them up. I need a tie rod in on the passenger side of my 2002 Ram 2500 4x4. And what's the name brand on it? And how much is it? And then you can do that two or three times with, you know, Napa, AutoZone, O'Reilly's, and you're going to find some. And the most expensive isn't always the best, but
2 minutes.
Generally speaking, there's not going to be a wide gap. But the one better quality is going to be either the middle or the high. Okay?
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
All right. You bet. Ben, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Dr. Mark. Longtime fan.
Well, thank you.
I go back to before you were out at did a remote out at the Gilbert auction.
Oh, yeah. That goes back to, gosh, the late 80s, early 90s maybe?
When I first got down here, right.
Yeah.
Situation. I got one of my best vehicles I've ever owned, an 04 Trailblazer.
Okay.
And every once in a while, I get a warning. It used to be just a less serious thing, but okay. Now it's got service engine soon, and okay. it stalls once in a while at signals. Now, in the last year, I have replaced the throttle body and the coil.
Okay. Okay, what has to, the SES light is a service engine soon light, and the computer has identified a problem. And what we have to do is first of all, we get the code, and the code gives us what state the problem's in. So the code says the problem's in Montana. So we're going to go into that system, and it could be evaporative system, where we're sucking fumes off the tank. So we go into the evaporative system, and we make sure that the canister's not plugged. We make sure that all the purge valves are opening and closing. And then we ask you, hey, Ben, do you stuff the tank? And you say, yes. And we say, we don't want you to stuff the tank anymore. We want you to run it to 3/4. Watch the gauge and fill it 3/4. And we're going to clear the code. And we want you to go drive it and see if it comes back. And you come back and say, no, it didn't come back. And we say, okay, well, stop stuffing the tank because you're sucking liquid into a system that's only supposed to suck vapor. So that's the reason why you have the check engine light. It could be an O2 sensor. It could be an O2 sensor code, oxygen sensor code. And the oxygen sensor is either stuck rich or lean. If it's stuck rich, it could very well be that you've got an injector leaking. So you can replace the oxygen sensors until we're all dead and all you're doing is killing the messenger. On the other hand, if it's stuck lean, then you make the motor run rich. And if the O2 sensor bounces back and starts screaming, rich, 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 then we know the O2 sensor is talking right. It can see both ends of the parameter, but the car's running lean, and we find the PCV valve hose has come off. Or the PCV valve hose has a hose. The PCV valve hose has a hole in it the size of a pencil, and that's a vacuum leak, which makes it run lean. So that's really what it's all about. But that SES light is yellow or orange, yes?
I believe it's orange, yeah.
Yeah. Orange means caution. That's all it means. Red means stop. If you get a red temp light and a red oil light or any kind of a red light, that means stop. That doesn't mean tomorrow. That means now. But a yellow light is just caution. So I'm sure your SES light isn't red. I'm sure it's yellow, and you have time to get it fixed. Okay?
This 4.2 is a heck of an engine.
It is. It is. It is. It didn't stay around long, but yes, it's a good motor. And your Trailblazer was made in the early stages of computers. And to be honest with you, it's a version 1, and now we're at version 2027 or something like that. So there's been a lot of version and improvements, but yours is the basic one, and it's a good system. It will do just fine. Okay?
Very good, sir. Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. 602-508-0960. Gil will answer your phone, and Mark will stand by. Forty-four minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, my name's Mark Salem. Every Saturday from 10 to noon, we're here talking about cars, your car problems, your car stuff, your tires, your belts, your symptoms, all that kind of stuff. 602-508-0960. We're going to quit at noon, which is 15 minutes away, but I've got time to get two or three calls in, so if you want to wait till the last of the show, then now's the time. 602-508-0960. Tom, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Thank you for... 02 Windstar, my light comes on, says check traction control, and then the brake red light thing comes on, but when I stop and reset it, it seems to go off. Is there an issue there?
Well, is the ABS light red, or is it orange or yellow?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it's red.
Okay. What we normally do is the first thing we do is do a visual inspection of the sensors, and there's probably going to be four of them, and obviously they have a tone ring that they watch and give a signal to the computer. If the tone ring's broken or missing, then that's the problem. If there's all kinds of mud all over one of them, that could be the problem. But then we're going to take two guys, and one's going to drive, and one's going to have a television screen in front of him from what we call a scanner. It's not a code reader, but it's a scanner where we're actually communicating with the WinStar. And so we're going to go drive it, and when we're going straight down the road, all four of those sensors better be at 37 miles an hour. If the speedo says 30, we are looking at 30. Then we're going to take it in behind the Bash's store, and we're going to do really tight circles. So we're going to take a right circle real tight, and kind of, we're not going to go fast, but we're going to go. Then we're going to stop and go left circles, and sooner or later that light's going to come on. And when it comes on, we're going to look and see which one's lost its signal, which one's not talking anymore. So that you have to have.
That takes somebody to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Now here's how you can save yourself a lot of money. How are you resetting it?
I'm just turning off the ignition and restarting.
Okay. Good. Good. Pay attention.
And it goes for a few days.
Okay. Pay attention to when it comes on, because we had a lady in the other day that she said, you know, my ABS light's coming on, and we said, okay, and she surprised the heck out of us. She goes, every time I stop and make a hard right turn, it comes on. Ooh, we haven't heard that in a long time. So the guys go out, one of them's driving. And see, the one has to look at the scanner, and he can't drive and look at the scanner at the same time. We're just charging for one tech because it's going to be a 15-20-minute drive. The idea is that they went out and they went into the back of the Bash's, and they drive forward, you know, all the way down the back drive, and then they stop, and they turn the steering wheel all the way to the right, and they do a 45-degree turn. And then all of a sudden they do another 45-degree turn, and the light comes on. And we lost the sensor. Now, if you think about it, on a right turn, the left side tires have more of an arc than the right side tires. So the left side tires are moving a longer distance than the inner tires. What was happening was one of the inside sensors was just dropping off. And so the computer thinks that the right front tire isn't spinning and that you're pirouetting on that tire. And I've lost control of that tire. I've lost the signal. This isn't a tough one. This isn't a tough one. But you can, if you want to wait till the light comes on or until you figure it out, you're okay. With the ABS light on, it just means you don't have an anti-lock brake system. We've shut that down. You still have conventional brakes.
Okay.
All righty?
All right. One other question, if I may. The heater vent doors, it's a vacuum leak. Is there some place to start checking on that? You know, when I accelerate, everything goes to the defroster.
Okay. Yeah, I would go and find the vacuum line that comes from the firewall and goes to a port on the engine. I'd put a T there, and then I'd put a vacuum gauge on it on a 6-foot hose, and I'd take it into the car. And then as I drove around, I just watched that. And on wide open throttle, your vacuum will drop to nothing because you just opened the blades wide open. And I want to be able to see that that line still has some static in it, because usually upstream it's got a one-way check valve. But I want to caution you, if that's all you got, to go into that dashboard and find out which servo is bad is going to cost you. That's going to be a number 5 or 6 on the tough scale. And it's not going to be cheap. So if you want to put up with that, you can. Now, I would say that half of those are going to be fixed underneath the hood. And as a matter of fact, I'll tell you something. A friend of mine that came up here the other day to help me do some work with the horses, and he complained about that, and he had a Dodge truck. Well, I know Dodges, so I lifted up the hood, and I can't do this all the time. I lifted up the hood, and there's this white plastic line that's broken. And I said, that's it. So I went and got a piece of windshield wiper hose, and I slid it on one end, and I slid it on the other, and I patched those two together. And he was gone maybe 15, 20 minutes, and he calls me, and he says, what do I owe you? And I said, well, it depends. If I fixed it, you owe me $400, and if I didn't fix it, then I'm sorry. And he goes, well, will you settle for $20? And I said, well, I'll settle for you buying the first beer the next time we're out. And he goes, okay, fine. So I fixed it. So, and here's the deal.
Yeah, I replaced it.
On your
I replaced the servo.
Okay.
Under the dash.
All righty. Well, you know that's not
pull
it.
That radio.
Okay. Yeah. Here's the deal.
That's not it.
That in your Windstar, you already know the engine is stuffed into a compartment the size of a coffee can. So to get in there and follow those vacuum lines is not going to be an easy task. But I think if you go to the source of the vacuum that feeds the blend doors and all it feeds the infrastructure that's going to give you windshield air, center vent, and floor. That's what we're talking about. So there's a vacuum system that opens and closes different things to give you defrost, center vent, and floor. So and you have a regular garage?
Yes.
Okay, all right. I would call them and say, are you capable of tracking this down and give me some kind of an idea? Most of us are going to bid that for an hour. We think, I can fix this. I can find it in an hour. And most everybody's about $115 to $125 an hour. So, and then hopefully if your shop gets it in a half an hour, they just charge you for a half an hour.
Yeah.
Okay?
Where's the source of vacuum under the hood?
It's going to be at the engine. There's going to be a port on the intake manifold that provides vacuum to that system. Now, sometimes the EGR valve or the PCV valve hose will spring a leak in it, and that will rob that system of vacuum. But they both have a nipple on the intake manifold that we draw, but the one that runs your dash controls is a very small line, and the one that goes to your PCV valve is as big as your ring finger.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
All righty.
Hey, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Good luck.
Appreciate it.
You bet. Blackwell Automotive is up at 40th and Greenway. Tom and I are twin brothers of different mothers because sometimes there's no filter between your ears and your mouth. But I can tell you, he knows how to fix a car. If you live anywhere in that North Scottsdale area and you're looking for a garage, here's what's about a good garage. Number one, if you've got a car that we're not the best person to fix, or if you've got a problem on a car that we've never seen before, we're going to send you to somebody we know who can fix your car. We're not going to just stumble around and wreck up a bunch of labor. Number two, we've been in business a long time. Okay, I've been in 39 years, and I think Top's been in 30 years. We've been around a long time. We're making money, and we're not ripping off our customers, and you can look at our Yelp reviews and all of our reviews and find out that every once in a while we have a bad one, and I raise my hand the same way. But the idea is that we've been around the block, and we've been around a long time. Speaking of reviews, a lady not too long ago wrote a review, and she was mad at me because I wouldn't replace her air conditioning compressor. Well, we have a warranty, and she was past the warranty. So she complained on, I don't remember what it was, and my response to her was, it's just as unacceptable for you to want to lengthen the warranty as it would be to you if we wanted to shorten the warranty. It's a deal between you and me. I'm going to warranty that air compressor for a year, and I'm not going to warranty it for 12 years or 2 years, because that's not the deal. So we have an agreement, and I'm not going to shorten it, and I'm not going to let you lengthen it. And she was pretty mad at me, but I also told her, my staff told you that if you want us to fix it, that we're going to ask our parts vendor if they would extend a courtesy to us, analyze the failure of the compressor, and if there's any financial considerations, we'll pass them on to you. Now, sometimes the vendor will say, Mark, just give her another compressor. She pays the labor. I'm not paying the labor. So I say, fine. So I say to the customer, you're going to pay the labor. The compressor is going to be provided for free. Now, sometimes the vendor will say, Mark, you came back to the well too many times. And that's never happened to me. But by the same token, that does happen to all of us. So sometimes you can ask your vendor, but there's times that the vendor will say, let me look it up, and he goes, oh, we've been having trouble with those compressors. I'll take care of it. I'll say, fine. So who we got on the phone?
We have Sam.
Sam, good morning to you.
Good morning. I got a question about aluminum radiators.
Okay.
Are they better than the copper brass for the older cars?
They dissipate heat better. They're a heck of a lot more expensive. And they typically are run, there's going to be electric fans that are on one side or the other of them. And to be perfectly honest, I will tell you and others that you stick with what got you to the dance. So if you have a copper radiator in there and you flush it, like your owner's manual says, it'll last every bit as long as the aluminum radiator. It'll dissipate heat every bit as well, maybe slightly worse, but who cares? But when you go to replace that aluminum radiator, it's going to cost a lot of money. So,
Is the two-core aluminum better than a three-core copper? Because I'm having problems with this El Camino I've got, 65 El Camino.
Okay.
And it's always run warm on me, but even now at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, just tooling around on 40-mile-an-hour surface street,
okay,
it's up at 210.
I can fix this for you right now.
Okay.
You're wrong about it running warm. You're just wrong. I want that car to run 220. That's the normal range. Let me explain why. In the days when that car was first built, we had sludge problems on every car in the 70s. Every single car in the 70s would come in at 30, 40, 50, 60,000 miles. The mud in the oil pan and underneath the intake at 100,000 miles was so deep you couldn't see the lifters or the push rods. So all of a sudden, the oil guys go, well, we know what's going on. Every time you shut the car off, you have a tablespoon of water as we condense the vapor inside the motor. A tablespoon of water. So let me ask you something. When does water boil?
At 212.
Bingo.
2 minutes.
Bingo. So here's the issue. We're going to get that oil temperature up to 220. We're going to boil the water out. And as it turns from a liquid to a vapor, it's going to be sucked out and sent down the tailpipe in the PCV valve system. Today, we open up a 15-year-old car, and it'll have 500,000 miles on it, and we won't find what effectively is 3 tablespoons of sludge in it. So you're like everybody else with those old cars, and I'm not faulting you, and I'm not making fun of you, but I promise you I'm right. I promise you. The gauge on your car, that needle should be between 1/2 and 3/4. And it's fine. It's fine. As a matter of fact, many of the older cars that we work on, we put a 195 in them to ensure that it's going to run 210, 220. So I
should have a minimum of 180?
Oh, if it didn't run 220, I'd figure out why not.
Okay.
A three-row brass, to answer your question, is fine. It's just fine. But I promise you I'm right. Even the oil guys, we used to blame the sludge on Pennzoil and Quaker State and all that. Everybody had an idea which oil caused sludge. Today, we're a lot smarter. And I want to tell you something. Everything since probably the mid-80s and for sure the 90s, we've been running at 220. And everything's got a 195 thermostat in it. Everything. So all I'm saying to you is bring it up. And you're okay. If you wanted to take my grandkids to California, I'd let them go with you because I know you're not going to break down. But if you want sludge in your car, keep doing what you're doing. But 190 to 210 doesn't bother me in the least bit. And I own some of the old cars you're talking about. Anyway, if you want to continue the conversation, mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. Please drive safely. Please don't drink and drive. And if somebody lets you in, stick your arm out the window and wave and say thank you to them. Error, you can do it the other way around. You let them in.